Welcome to the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. On each and every episode, Brian talks with coaches, athletes, and performers in all arenas who are putting into practice the principles of peak performance that will help you close the gap from where you are to where you want to be, to help you become a master of the mental game, and to help you start dominating the day.
This is Brian Kane, your peak performance and mental conditioning coach, and today we're here with Steve Smith, head baseball coach at Baylor University in the 2012 Big 12 Baseball Coach of the Year and coach of the Baylor Bears that won the 2012 Big 12 Conference Championship. Coach, appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us today and talk a little mental conditioning. Could you give the listeners, you know, your background kind of in the game of baseball from when you played, then into professional baseball, and then all the way to where you are today as the head baseball coach at Baylor?
I grew up in Gulfport, Mississippi, played college baseball, started out at a Division II school playing both football and baseball, and I transferred to Baylor and just played baseball, got drafted in 1983 by the Giants in the fifth round and went out and played 4 years professional baseball. When that was over, I came back, finished my undergraduate degree at Baylor. I got my first job coaching in college baseball as a graduate assistant at Texas A&M 1988 and 89, and after 2 years there and completing my master's degree, I was hired at Mississippi State, which was quite an occurrence for me, having grown up in Mississippi, and I spent 5 years there with Coach Polk, and am now in my 19th year here at Baylor as the head coach.
So, you know, obviously you haven't had a chance to be a grad assistant at A&M, which is one of the top programs, and then at Mississippi State, and haven't seen kind of baseball at that highest level and early in your coaching days. Could you talk a little bit about the importance for the young coaches listening to this to finding a mentor, a guy like a Ron Polk or a guy like you now have done for many assistants here at Baylor, and just that importance of getting into a quality family tree per se in coaching and the role of a mentor?
Well, it's a good question and incredibly valid. One of the things that I observed when I was just still playing, I realized what I wanted to do long term was coach. I never anticipated being where I am today or being a head coach at the college level. I just anticipated coaching. And one of the first people that I got to know was really when I was a player. I was a senior in high school, and I met Mark Johnson. He was an assistant at Mississippi State for Ron Polk, and as a kid, I dreamed of going there to play. So I developed a relationship with Coach Johnson that ultimately, I guess, from the time I met him when I was 18 to the time he hired me, I was 25. So I really could trace everything that's happened to me as a coach back to my senior year in high school and an initial meeting with Mark Johnson when he spoke at a clinic. I admired him greatly, and I knew his tree, if you will. I mean, Coach Johnson had worked for Jerry Kendall at the University of Arizona and then for Ron Polk at Mississippi State. And I remember thinking back then, you know, how incredible that must have been. And I never in a million years did I think that I would one day have worked for only two men, Mark Johnson and Ron Polk. And I have since gotten to know Coach Kendall quite well. And so I feel like I've been touched by so many people through both Coach Johnson and Coach Polk. And, it's a blessing. I feel incredibly blessed to have worked for both those men.
You know, one of the things that I have seen just being around the game is that coaches like yourself and guys like Mark Johnson and Ron Polk, they're always very open to high school coaches,
or other coaches from other schools coming in and observing at practice and kind of just showing them, you know, the lifting the hood up on the car and saying, hey, here's our engine and how we run our program. Come on in and learn from us. And I think a lot of high school coaches out there, or, you know, college coaches who maybe want to go observe another program and learn, are sometimes apprehensive to do that. Have you found that yourself or other top college coaches are open to allowing people to come in to kind of see what they do and learn?
Well, I think that the, you know, when I look at Ron Polk and Mark Johnson, you know, I do not consider them to be my peers in any way. I think they are, as you put it, mentors, and in a lot of ways, and I don't want to make them sound too antique, but, you know, they're ambassadors. I wouldn't necessarily go so far as to say founders, but they're ambassadors for college baseball. And so, and both of them, you know, and I think many men of their era, many of the coaches of their era are, as you describe, they're humble. They didn't get in it for the money. They didn't make a lot of money doing it. They got in it for the love of the game and the love of kids and wanting to coach and wanting to help people, you know, reach their fullest potential as a player and enjoy the dream of playing college baseball. And so there's not been, you know, this pride of ownership or competitiveness that got so, you know, so tough that they weren't ever willing to share or willing to, you know, let people come in. And then the other thing is, I think that all of them, they have under no illusion that they know it all. I think that some of the greatest coaches I think anywhere are at the high school level, and I would even go so far as to say even at the youth level. I've had the opportunity watching my two boys now as they've kind of come out of Little League and gone through youth league type stuff. I mean, I have sat and watched practices under their coaches and have come back and implemented some things that I've seen done when they were 14 years old. And that's kind of, I think, the way Mark Johnson and Ron Polk were, and many other men of their era, is that they didn't claim to know everything, and so they'd share what they knew, and then they hoped that you'd share what you knew with them.
So I think the message is loud and clear for that the coaches out there, don't be bashful and don't be hesitant to go ask other coaches and programs that you want to go observe and learn from to go in there for a couple of days and take a look at what's going on. A lot of coaches are open to sharing that. If we can kind of shift gears here a little bit, Coach, and go back to 2012, you know, Baylor had, as a university, maybe the most successful run of a year for a university that there ever has been in college athletics. And Baylor baseball was a big part of that, setting a record for consecutive wins in the Big 12, winning the Big 12, ultimately being a number four national seed and being one game away from going to the College World Series. Can we go back and talk a little bit about 2012 and kind of give your story about that team and maybe from a mental game perspective, what you guys did that you thought was beneficial?
Well, I think that, you know, to tell the 2012 story, you got to know how 2011 ended. 2011, we are in the championship game of the regional tournament hosted at Rice. We're actually playing the Cal Bears. We're the visiting team in this final championship game. I think it was a 3-run lead in the bottom of the ninth. Cal comes to the plate. The long story short is we kick a ball at second. We misplay a rundown, and we hang a slider and give up a four spot in the bottom of the ninth, and Cal has a walk-off win. We went into that game knowing that if we were to win that game because of what had happened in the other regional that we were paired with, that we would host a super regional and that we would be hosting Dallas Baptist to go to Omaha in the College World Series. So, you know, our guys, they really knew what was before them and the opportunity that was before them. And, you know, we played so well in that game. You know, we really had. We on a number of different fronts, we had just played well. And to have it just sort of, you know, cumulative meltdown, in the ninth inning of that game was easily the most painful loss that I've seen a team here have to live with. It wasn't just one person; it was several, and it was extremely painful. So they carried that pain with them through the summer. Our coaching staff did as well. And when we came back together in August of 2011, our motivation level, the motivation level of the team, was very high. This was clearly a team that had not forgotten what had happened. We had the vast majority of the players back. We had only lost, three or four guys. So I think that was the stage. The players were incredibly pliable. They were very open to not just being coached, on the physical game, but honestly open to, to learning the mental game and growing in it. We had been trying. I mean, all of us as coaches have understood for a long time how important the mental game is in game of baseball. Teaching it and implementing it and being effective in doing that, that's a whole nother issue. And I think that, not to help you sell more books, but I think what you've done, not just with our players. Obviously, there's been a big impact there, but it's clearly been as big an impact with me and with our other coaches. I really feel like that following the 2011 meltdown in that final game, and us partnering really early in the fall of 2011 and throughout the spring of 2012, You've really helped me formulate a game plan of how to help players learn to play the game one pitch at a time, which ultimately is what every coach who's ever coached it wants to do. And one of the things I really think, that has happened, I think that there are so many more, there's so much more competing for the interest and the passion for players today than there's ever been. And I'm sure that there was more competing for the players of my era than there were for those before me. And so I think the ability to play one pitch at a time, I think it grows more difficult and more challenging with every era and every generation of player. And that's why I think that the whole concept of mental conditioning and sports psychology, if you will, I think it's an emerging, ever emerging idea and science that probably wasn't very well received two generations ago and maybe not even needed as much because, I think men were more focused at that period of time. There weren't it was just a game. I mean, it was nothing but a game. I mean, that generation, those generations in the early 1900s and through the mid 1900s, their perspective on life was pretty darn healthy. I think they went through two world wars and a depression, and so baseball was a game. Now the players of today and even my generation, we haven't had to endure those things. And so our perspective is not as healthy. And I think it affects us. I think we deal with fear at a level that's exaggerated. It's not even real. What is to be afraid of playing the game of baseball? If we ever had to endure a war, we would know that there's nothing to fear in the game of baseball. But, we haven't. I think this generation of player, as well as mine, we've been blessed. Some would call it spoiled. Maybe it's across all of society, that you could find it anywhere. But I really think that's why – that coaches have to do more than just coach. You know, I remember when I first became a head coach and we were working together as a staff, and I would tell my guys, don't bring me a head case. Don't bring me a high-maintenance player. And I said it rather, you know, rather strongly and almost boastfully. I'm not going to deal with that. And you know, at some point, you know, I realized that even if you're intentional in trying to avoid certain profiles of players, we're all high maintenance. We're all in need of the training and the ability to focus in a way that the players of years ago I don't think probably were. And so I guess what I eventually did is I wound up saying, you know what, they're my guys. You know, once they're here, I've got to learn how to adjust, and I've got to learn how to help them where they are, because they're not just going to always be like me. And I think that opened the door to where we are now. That team last year of 2012 embraced the mental game and embraced the challenge of playing the game one pitch at a time as well as any team I've been around. And I think it was amazing. We weren't super talented. I think we were more talented maybe than I gave us credit for, or many others did too. But that wasn't really what set us apart. What set us apart was a commitment to the mental game. And I've come to believe that the test of playing the game one pitch at a time is a great test of someone's character. And if you've got high character kids, then you've got a great chance of playing the game one pitch at a time.
Yeah, you mentioned that previous generations that had to go through war and some, you know, trials and tribulations, they had maybe a better perspective than some of the people do today. One of the things that I found that you do that is fascinating is you've done perspective posters. Can you talk a little bit about the perspective poster?
Well, it's your brainchild. Perspective posters are, you know, everyone's unique, and everyone's perspective and how, you know, how they are affected by things they read, things they see, is all different. What might motivate me or move me or touch me is a pretty personal thing, and it may not be, and it won't be the same thing that touches someone else. So, you know, a perspective poster is really just something to help keep you grounded. During the roller coaster ride that most baseball seasons involve, you know, every team, I think, regardless of how successful they are, they're going to go through a valley. They're going to go through some ups and downs. And, you know, the whole idea, I think, to keeping your highs low and your lows high is maintaining perspective. You know, realizing nothing is ever as bad as you think it is, nor is anything ever as good as you think it is. And, you know, what can you put, what can you pick up around you and put on a poster that helps remind you of that? I think that's an individual thing, but there's certainly a lot of things out there that you could look to do that.
You know, not only did you do the perspective posters, you also had, you know, vision boards that guys would walk by, and how you broke the team up into groups and created those. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, the vision board and maybe the process in which Baylor had the players put those together?
You know, very similar process. You're asking a little bit of a different question. A perspective poster is really, a question of, so what? You know, it's just not as bad as we think it is, or it's not as good as we think it is. A vision board or a vision poster is probably more motivated to get you to the finish line. What is it? Why do you really play the game? you know, you got to ask yourself those kinds of questions when you're putting together a vision board. You know, are you really, I mean, even if you're a super talented player, are you really playing the game just for money? I mean, is that what you put on your vision board is just dollar signs, and that's what you're doing it for? You know, I think there are people like that. And certainly the amounts of money that can be made today in the game of baseball, I really think have motivated and, kind of made it difficult or more challenging for players of this generation to really know if they love the game or not. You know, I think even the way that college baseball has grown all across the country with the facilities and with the opportunities and with television and all of the things that you know, we didn't really have even in my generation. You know, I question sometimes if, you know, the reasons why kids play the game. And I think parents, I think it's an important question that parents have to deal with even of themselves. You know, why do they want their sons to play the game? And, but the vision poster is sort of, a personal answer to that question. You know, why do I play the game? What am I hoping to get out of this? What is it deep down, you know, that motivates me to play the game of baseball?
You know, one thing that you had last year that I noticed on the road with you guys at Oklahoma were the signs of success that you would hang in the dugout, and also how you would kind of have a message that you would share with the team before the game. Could you talk a little bit about the signs that you'd put in there and also the message and kind of how that was a part of your pregame process from a mental conditioning standpoint?
You know, and again, you know, all of this is things that you have helped me see the value in. And there are other folks out there that, you know, that are adding to me too. None of this is original from me at all. But, you know, a sign of success, you know, is something that it's almost like a vocabulary. You know, there's just a vocabulary that those that are pursuing growing mentally, you know, in the game and being able to play the game one pitch at a time, I think there's a vocabulary that they all tend to adopt, and it can become more personal, I think, for each team. I'm not saying every team is exactly the same, but the signs of success that I would hang up, they would vary from day to day. I might one day have one hanging up that said "We over me." I might have one hanging up one day, and I put them in some interesting places too. You know, what was it? Pleasure over pressure, you know, kind of things. You know, one pitch warrior. A number of different things that would, you know, and they would, I think they probably send a different message to each guy, but it all brings us back to the same place, which is really to try to be present, to be in the moment, and to play the game one pitch at a time, where you're not looking you know, behind, and you're not looking ahead. You know, it's the focus is on this pitch. And even, you know, beyond just those signs of success, I think that there's a vocabulary that occurs in the dugout, you know, during the game. One of the things that you've really helped me with is how to motivate guys that aren't really getting to play. And one of the things that's really difficult and different about coaching baseball as opposed to for sure football and basketball is we don't have free substitution. And so you don't get to run a guy out there for a couple of plays or, you know, a possession or anything like that. You know, you write nine guys up on a lineup and that's who gets to play. And you know, you try to get people at bats, you try to get people, you know, playing time, but you know what? If you if you think you've got a lead and you start clearing your bench, you know, there's no clock either. And so you got to get the last out. And, you know, there have been times when I have done that, and boy, you know, you it almost backfires on you because you get your horses out of the game, and you know, you run into something that you can't keep. You know, you lose the game. I've actually lost a game here at Baylor where we were leading by 8 runs with 2 outs in the 9th inning. So, you know, you have that happen a few times to you as a coach, and you get pretty gun shy about making a lot of changes. But even that vocabulary, and giving those players that are in the dugout a role, you know, giving them value, helping them understand that they can make a difference, and they can influence the game, you know, from the dugout. And so we've got signs up that remind them of that as well.
Excellent. Last couple questions for you here, Coach. Appreciate you taking the time. Routines from a hitting and pitching standpoint, and just the importance of, you know, the deep breath and having a release when they get in red lights, and for the player to be kind of aware of their signal lights. And if they're in green, they just trust the routine and go. And if they're red, they kind of use that release. Could you talk a little bit about the routine and also just the awareness that goes with that of where they're at mentally?
Well, I think the awareness is maybe the one of the biggest things that all of us, you know, we have to all know what our buttons are. I mean, those of us who are married know what our buttons are for sure. And, you know, the application of processes and routines, it's really, really effective in baseball, but I think it's really effective in life as well and in a lot of other relationships. But, you know, there's not a lot in the game that you can control. It's, and I think it's one, as a coach, there's almost nothing you can control. I mean, that is, again, to kind of compare it to our counterparts in football and basketball, you know, we don't get to decide at the end of the game who gets the ball. We don't get to decide who takes the last shot. You know, we can't hold the ball and run the clock out. I mean, there's so many things that we cannot control in baseball. And it's one of the most frustrating things for someone like me who is more type A and really would like to have control. I've looked back on my life as a player, and it's clear to me now why I love pitching so much, you know, because I had the ball. And you know what? If I gave up the home run, I wasn't happy about it, but I could deal with that a lot more than I could you know, pulling away from the fence and not making a catch. I just, you know, the whole issue of control is one of the great life lessons that the game of baseball teaches us about. So the implementation of routines, it gives the player a bridge. It gives a player something he can control. It gives him the way to get from, what he's rehearsing mentally into, at the end of the day, what he's got to do, which is either deliver a pitch, hit a ball, or field a ball, or throw a ball. I mean, that's, you know, you can't, that has to come naturally. That has to be as innate to a player as walking. You know, you can't have to think about a lot of those things. The game's not designed that way. Although there's a lot of thinking in it. Once the game is on, once the ball is hit, it now has to turn into a game of action. And, you know, I think routines give players something they can control. I've looked at golf. I've often thought there was a lot of similarities between golf and baseball. And when you watch those professional golfers, you know, with thousands of people gathered around them on a tee box and, you know, millions watching on TV, I thought, how in the world do those guys, you know, deal with that? But if you watch them, they've got routines. It's just incredible what they do the same every single time. It don't matter if it was a 2-foot putt or a 20-foot putt. They have their process. They have their routine. And so that's where their focus is. And if your focus is on a routine, then it's not on anything else. And there are so many other things out there in today's world that are trying to get your focus. Many, many things that go on. And so I think that's the real value in the routine. It's not a placebo. It's not a magic potion, but it keeps the mind quiet, and it keeps the mind from being a hurdle that someone has to overcome. There's enough difficult things in the game as it is. You know, you want to at first be able to get out of your own way, and I really think that's what routines allow players to do.
You know, one of the things that I think you've done so beautifully here is created core covenants and core values for your program. Could you talk about that process and what the core covenants and what it means to be a part of Baylor baseball?
Thank you for the question. I've been here now going on 19 years, and those things that we call our core values have sort of evolved over time. I remember when I first got here, I think I probably brought a lot of the philosophical leanings of my dad, things I had heard him say when I was growing up. My dad, by the way, never coached anything, and he never played baseball. He was a fast-pitch softball guy growing up on a dairy farm, and he was a soil conservationist. So I didn't have a coach for a dad in that regard. I do think I had a mental skills coach for a dad. Looking back on it, I think he gave me some things, that really did serve me well when I was playing. When I came here, I remember clearly, what I told our guys: put first things first, do whatever it takes, and make no excuses. And those core values were really putting first things first was about having your priorities in order. Doing whatever it takes spoke to the issue of commitment. Making no excuses spoke to the issue of responsibility and accountability. And I still think that is an outstanding representation of what we try to do here. And that's where it started for me. Put first things first, do whatever it takes, and make no excuses. I think that philosophy or that counsel serves us well in a lot of places. As time went on, I remember clearly at the end of several years, as I would sit down and look and see how we did and compare it to other teams, it was clear to me that there were teams that might have been less talented, that the issue of moving forward, the issue of success at this level of Division I baseball, it had less to do with talent and more to do with something else. And I wasn't sure exactly what that something else was. I suspected I knew what it was. And when I first started down this road thinking about it, I thought it had to do with competence, talent. You had to have talent. If I asked myself the question, what do you have to have to win a championship? I thought it took talent and it took character. And I define those as the ability to win and the will to win. At some point in the evolution here, I had two core values that I at least felt like drove our program, and one was competence and one was character. Somewhere around 2007, 2008, 2009, I got to the place where I thought there's something else, that's important here, and it all revolved around the word fit. I think we all, no matter what kind of work we're in, we've seen talented people whose character was impeccable who just didn't fit, whether it was the company, the university, the team, whatever it was, it just wasn't a good fit. And that's when I started to think about culture and what were we looking for? What person fit here? What type of player historically really succeeded at Baylor? What kind of player really succeeded here, not just on the field, but in the classroom? And I define that culture. It jumped out at me when I started thinking about it. There were two aspects of our culture that defined us, whether we liked it or not. One was humility, and the other was confidence. When I first started thinking about it, I thought, you know, those seem to be, you know, a little at odds with each other. You know, how is one to be, you know, a culture of humility and at the same time a culture of confidence? And, you know, and it didn't take long. And I think most coaches and most people will quickly find, you know, realize, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. You know, I think the great players are the ones that they believe that they can be successful at any given moment against any given opponent. But I also believe the great players believe that they can be beaten at any time by any opponent. They have a healthy view of themselves. They have a healthy view of the gifts that God gave them, that, you know, they have no real claim over. They are blessed. And so there's a humility that comes with that that's also highly motivating. You know, some of the best pitchers that I've ever had were the ones that I won't call them scared, but they had a real healthy fear of getting beat. And they never took anybody lightly. They never took a hitter, no matter what his average was, no matter who he played for, no matter what he looked like. If he had a bat in his hands, he could beat you. And I think that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, a player, a program that has a real sense of confidence that it can be successful, but it also has a real sense of humility, you know, that it won't be easy and we have to prepare and we have to be ready. We have to put ourselves in position to be successful. So for me, our core values eventually evolved into those three things. It was competence, character, and then culture. And, you know, by competence, you know, I think there's two things that players have to be competent in. One's the skills, you know, the ability. They have to have the ability to play the game. But that's not that hard to find. You know, in this country, you can find kids that can run, hit, and throw and catch it. But the second component of competence is awareness. That one's harder to find. Because by awareness, that's a pretty big umbrella. I mean it in the sense of being, how do you play the game? It's one thing to be able to throw the ball, but where do you throw it? You know, what's going on in the game? How aware are you of the game? Do you understand the game? And I think more and more of our players, you know, they spend a lot of their time with an individual instructor, a personal trainer, a dietitian, and they're all working on making themselves into the best athlete they can be. But there's more to it than just the ability aspects of it. You have to be aware. You have to understand how to play the game. And in the context of what we're talking about, the mental game, self-awareness is huge. It is the guys have to understand themselves. What are their strengths and weaknesses? What are those red lights, you know, and those green lights? They have to understand, you know, and be aware of, you know, what pushes them one way or the other. You know, one of the things that's in this sport of baseball that I don't think is true in football, which is the other sport I have the most experience in, you know, we have a broad spectrum of personality in the game of baseball. You know, we have some type A, some, you know, some high energy, high motor, super intense people. But then we also have, you know, that real laid back, you know, almost shy, timid guy who's not any less talented. You know, you yell at that guy and he may crawl under the table. You yell at the other guy and he may run through the wall. And neither one of those things are really the desired outcome. And for me as a coach, there's a lot of times I wish we played the game of baseball out of a three-point stance so that we could just yell at them all and that would give us the result we want. But it doesn't. And so not the players don't have, you know, don't just have to be the only ones that, that understand themselves and are aware of themselves. I got to be able to figure them out too. And that's where you're helping me and have helped me a great deal, because I'm not a psychologist. I never have been. I didn't want to be one, but you know what? If we're a coach in today's world, game on. We've that's just part of it now.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you sharing that insight into the core values of Baylor baseball and the character and the culture and the competence of the program. And I want to thank you for taking the time to sit down with us here today and share a lot of insight into your program and your coaching career. And, you know, it's been very informative for the listeners. And last question, if you could remove the skull cap of anybody listening to this and plant one seed, one thought in their head that would germinate that you think would help them to be successful. Plant one seed in their head, one last takeaway from Steve Smith. What would that one seed be?
I think it would simply be to believe. It would be to believe. Number one, it would be to believe in a sovereign God who is in control of everything and who gives us great opportunities and great blessings in this life. To believe that nothing that happens to us is outside of His control, and that believe that the desires of our hearts and the dreams that we have, they are there for our good and His glory and our pleasure, and. You know, if you've got that kind of belief, and you embrace that into your life, I don't think that there's really anything that will that you won't be able to do, and that you'll be able to achieve what it is you believe in.
Coach Smith, thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it. Well done, man. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. Please make sure that you visit briankane.com, that's briankain.com, and sign up for my Monday message, where every Monday I deliver straight to your inbox videos, interviews, articles, tips, techniques, and strategies that you can use to master the mental game. You can also contact me through my website on our Contact Us page and see my calendar of where I'm going to be in the country and when I'm coming to your area, so that we can get together and that we can continue to go out there and dominate the day.
The Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast is part of the Top Coach Network. This is a production of Corn Belt Sports.